Golden Period of Atlantis. This is audiobook in MP3 made via Ivona Reader on some interesting, and for me quite logic information regarding the alternative history of Atlantis. There has through the ages come forward many theories and informations on just to Atlantis, and as a story is told some different on basis of the spiritual standpoint of every person, this may just be one of the history timelines for that old continent, which supposedly, most of us had some or many incarnations on as well, so then this talk may be on of many of the readers slash listeners' own path in the past. Well, then. This below feels quite right according to what my, runes, intuition, but remark it is alleged channeled, and everybody must make up their own minds. The Golden Age. We tell you in fact that the Golden Period of Atlantis was the highest level of light consciousness ever achieved on the Earth plane in any advanced civilization, higher than Lemuria, higher than Mu, higher than Rama, higher than Ignatius. It has become somewhat fashionable to consider Lemuria as being the utopian civilization, and though they did achieve a relatively short-lived phase of high consciousness, most in that era were not truly in physical bodies, rather in divic-like etheric states, and did not face the difficulties required of the physical Earth stage. Indeed, Lemuria never achieved the highly advanced level that existed in that golden phase of Atlantis from 40,000 BC to 18,000 BC, a time when gods walked with men, and all knew joyful expression. It was the hallowed time when many of you walked as star children, and later chose biology and the lesson cycles of reincarnation on the blue planet called Earth. So when you consider Atlantis, do not only remember its sad demise. It was but a short phase of the magnificent antediluvian world, yet it must not be forgotten, so very much is to be gained by understanding the final phase, and dear ones, it is time to remember. The Atlantean hologram. So we speak of once mighty Atlantis, and we speak to all of you. For Atlantis is a great hologrammic lesson, and ones whose time has returned, for the memory of Atlantis is not just a healing. Indeed, for some it is a requisite healing, a necessary cleansing, but for others it is also a benevolent empowerment. It recalls a time when you walked in knowledge. Regardless of your myriad roles in Atlantis, and dear ones, 70% of all on the planet at this time experienced physicality there, Atlantis now calls to you. And the call is not just for those of you of the Law of One, it is equally called to the Aryans, to the sons of Belial. Indeed, many of you experienced lifetimes in both ideologies. Does that surprise you? The deluge of 17,500 BC, downward spiral of the final phase. The time is after the second deluge, when the utopian Golden Age subsided and Atlantis split into five islands. The three major islands were known as Poseida, Arion and Og. The two smaller islands were under the rule of Arion, and were known as Adalia and Air. And so in the days after the second breakup of Atlantis, the benevolent government rule by kingdom passed into the phase of a confederation, state governments, in your terms, that ruled each of the islands. An aristocracy of sorts evolved that consisted of two opposing ideologies. The two major components of these were the Law of One, based predominantly on the Isle of Poseida, and the Sons of Belial based on the Isle of Arion. The Island of Arion was the most populated and exerted influence and political control over Og, Atalia and Air. Poseida was the planet's most potent vortex portal complex at the time of Atlantis. The Poseida grouping and isle housed the Temple of Healing, the Temple of Sound, the Temple of One, the Temple of Regeneration and the Temple of Knowledge. Poseida housed most of the major centers for higher learning. These were placed on Poseida because of its advantageous location within the geodesic grids and its proximity to beneficial electromagnetic energies that spiraled upward from the Earth's core. An incredibly potent healing spring flowed on Poseida, near the Temple of Healing, and its law spawned the myths of the Fountain of Youth passed down by the indigenous peoples of Florida. It flows yet into the oceans near Bimini. The Tall Ones, the golden race of Atlantis, of Pleiadian seed, were centered in Poseida, these ones averaging 10 to 12 feet in stature. These were a gentle race of giants, involved in the cultural, artistic and educational pursuits in the heart of Atlantis. Poseida was also the headquarters and nucleus of the crystalline power grid and interdimensional tunnel system. The most advanced, complex and beautiful of the crystals were here. There were of Acturian and Sirian construct, a living amalgam of many crystalline forms imbued with an alloy of platinum and gold. The crystals were housed in magnificent temples, some built of marble, others of crystalline sheets of beryl, corundum and diamond. Poseida was also the capital city of the island, and was called the Emerald City. The Atlanteans had perfected, with Arcturian technology, the ability to grow crystals of every structure and essence in an accelerated growth within the underground crystal beds of Arkansas, Tibet and Brazil, all being Atlantean colonies, accessed through the interdimensional tunnel system. Throughout Atlantis, power grid crystals, called bozes, were triangulated and connected through a gold-copper rod under an spherical dome that could be angled to receive specific stellar, solar and gravitational energy waves. This was the system used to power homes, offices, media, and theaters, manufacturing concerns, medical centers, schools and businesses. The poser system was received in each structure by receiving crystal units of various sizes. The poser system was also able to receive specialized refracted light and feed it into the energy system for use in the interdimensional tunnel system and feed crystalline light into conductive earth currents to raise the frequency into a semi-aware electromagnetic plasmic field of benevolent energy capable of retaining spiritual frequencies. A great crystalline satellite, referred to as the second moon of Atlantis, floated above in the skies and received, amplified and reflected refined energy back to the crystals for various beneficial purposes. It served both the posers and the master crystals used in temples. Specialized energy fields were projected into agricultural and crystal growing areas to amplify and accelerate growth, as well as into universities, hospitals, schools, offices, factories and workplaces to create a sense of well-being and invigoration for the workers and students. We will speak more of this second moon later in this essay. Now, the temples were astonishing works of sacred geometry and stunning architecture. Many of the great temples were covered in a dome of projected crystalline amplified light, somewhat like a glowing force field. These were of various colors and glowed in day and night. These were varied according to the purpose of the temple complex. Some temples projected domes and fields of vibratory light and resonate sound frequencies that amplified the senses and chakras, others amplified the receptive learning ability of the mind, and others enabled multidimensional consciousness, communication and transport. Additionally, most of the major cities during the Golden Age of Atlantis had crystalline power domes of energy fields above them. After the second deluge, only the capital city of Poseida had a full crystalline energy dome, and it was an incredible emerald green color. Prior to the deluge of 17,500 BC, most major cities, including Mayuvia, the capital of Arian, had such power domes over the perimeter. The one in Arian was a soft ruby red. In the Golden Age of Atlantis, the pyramids were three- and four-sided, depending on their utility, and generally made of marble, granite and complex crystals. The three-sided pyramids were used as antennas to draw and amplify energies and fed them into the poser grid to power homes, factories and create energy fields for various utilities. The crystalline satellite was used to reflect the angled stellar energy waves into these triangulated grids. There were over 100 of these triangulated pyramidal grid complexes. They were set up in concentric triangulation patterns all over the planet. They established a hemispheric grid network of crystalline and electromagnetic energy dividing the areas of Atlantis, America, Africa, Mediterranean Europe and South America into different demographic centers for powering population centers, and to modulate weather patterns and tides. The areas of Mongolia and Tibet were also part of this complex, connected by interdimensional light tunnels. But the largest groupings of these were in the homelands of Atlantis. The four-sided pyramids were essentially temple complexes set as full octahedrons and used for healing, learning, regeneration and spiritual purposes. These were not triangulated, and generally set on hilltops or along the coastlines to receive both tauric and celestial energies. The lands below the center plane were excavated to allow for the downward pyramid of the octahedron design construct, thus connecting energetically to both above and below. The law of one contingency of Poseida were devoutly spiritual people and sought equality among the people and a unification of oneness. Although much technology and quality of life had been lost in the prior two breakups of Atlantis, the first in 58,000 BC, the second in 17,500 BC, technology still remained at an advanced level. Yet the harmony experienced in the Golden Age of Atlantis spiraled downward after the breakup into islands in 17,500 BC as the islands grew into separately governed entities, which held to very differing ideologies in the initially chaotic and difficult period of reconstruction immediately after the breakup. Poseida and the Atlara. A highly disciplined and evolved sect of scientist-priest held the technical wisdom and expertise of managing the crystal power grids. The vast majority of Atlara were of the tall golden race, but there were also members from the bronze, white, Lamurian brown and Cetine races. At that time there were still Cetine dolphin beings that walked on two legs, verbally communicated and breathed air in a similar fashion to humankind. The sect of scientist priests were referred to as the Atlara. The Atlara still maintained the highest standards of consciousness and were able to continue vibrating at the very high frequencies of consciousness, at and above the level of 12th dimensional light and energy, remaining very pure and resonant with the true oneness concept of the Creator, God. They sustained higher dimensional telepathic contact with the advanced space brethren from the Pleiades, Arcturus, Andromeda and Sirius. The Atlara priests were highly revered and traditionally separate, above and exempt from governmental controls, and thus kept the knowledge and senior management of crystal technology largely in the wise and benevolent hands of the sect. Although there were some technicians and crystal engineers from the Poseidon populace involved who were not in the Atlara sect. The scientist priest of Atlara were both male and female and were capable of great lifespans, both through the regeneration of mind power and through the technology of same in the temple of rejuvenation. Many lived lifetimes in the same biology for 6,000 years, some to 12,000 years. Thus was the technology preserved through this holy sect. Many brilliant souls were among these. The entities you know as Galileo, Isaac Newton, Einstein, Tesla, Edison, Marcel Vogel, Ronald Herrmann and Da Vinci were among the Atlara. Tiber and Onna were part of this group of scientist priests, who lived very long lifetimes. Many of you, especially your artists, have great recall of the capital city of Atlantis located in the region of Poseida. It was termed the Emerald City because of the glowing green light dome projected over it. Some of your artists in fact have made renditions of the city that are quite accurate. It was an exquisite marvel of architecture, culture and engineering, by far the most beautiful metropolis that has ever existed on your planet. It was breathtaking. The city, also named Poseida, as was the state, was composed of a series of concentric walls and encircled by flowing sea-grown canals. It was full of beautifully constructed temples, universities, theaters and museums. At the very center was a hill, and on top of the hill the majestic and stunning Temple of Poseidon, which was visible from everywhere in the Holy Emerald City. Inside the temple was a massive gold statue of the god of the sea showing him driving six-winged horses made of extraterrestrial platinum. The statue was embellished with precious gemstones of every color and type. The temple was octagonal and along each of the eight walls were built convex enclosures with platforms for amazing crystals that stood 12 feet high and glowed like transparent diamonds. Poseida had been the least damaged of the major Atlantean cities after the breakup into islands, and was still of a very high frequency and quality of life. Arion and the industrial complex. Arion was the largest of the islands and the most populated. Arion was the commercial center and yielded the most influence from the economic, agricultural and military perspective. After the second deluge, Arion was significantly damaged and the infrastructure required a chaotic stage of rebuilding. In the process, The state became controlled by an elitist, affluent white race, who gained control of the economy, military powers and island state government, even though the majority of the populace were of the bronze or red race. From Aryan grew a corrupt power-minded aristocracy who sought to block the law of one and utilize Atlantis's technology for control of the world, this through the utilization of crystalline energy for weaponry, and use of genetic science for development and retention of an inferior race to serve as workers and soldiers. The genetic engineering was based in Mayuvia, on Aryan. It had originally been used for benevolent purposes, for seeking improved physical vehicles for those that had incarnated into physical bodies that mutated into half-man half-beast abominations. The genetic work had been processed and developed on Aryan and was used to remove appendages, claws, feathers and reptilian skins and scales. This was done in the Temple of Purification, somewhat of a specialized medical center. Again, we emphasize that during the Golden Age of Atlantis, its utility had been quite benevolent. Tremendous genetic advances were made and a great understanding of cloning and adjustment physical limitations for betterment came in responsible, ethical utility. In the chaos of the Reconstruction period, genetic engineering came under the control of the Belial group, and then denigrated into corrupt uses of greed and power. The genetic engineering began being used for dark ends, in creating a race of worker slaves and hybrid man-animals. Just as in Nazi Germany it was conveyed to the masses as development of a pure race. In fact, many of the genetic scientists were initially kept unaware of what their research and development work was being used for until it was essentially too late for them to stop it. Some of you carry great guilt to this day as a result of this work. Law of One and Sons of Belial. This use of genetically engineered servant classes led to the great rift between the Law of One and the Sons of Belial, the latter of which became so engrossed and hardened in the materialistic ambitions of the industrial machine that they lost sight of the spiritual ethics that had prevailed over the continent of Atlantis in the Golden Era. Literally hundreds of thousands of hybrid mutations were created to work the fields and monstrosities were created with controlled minds to robotically do the biddings of their masters. The agro-industrial society of Aryan became quite dependent on them. Souls became trapped in cloned bodies termed things and others with genetic lobotomies and nullified sexuality and emotional abilities. Many who were trapped in monstrous or sub-intelligent androgynous human bodies still carry that horrendous pain of being imprisoned in physical embodiments that allowed for no advanced learning, spiritual growth or emotional expression. For several millennia the two ideologies remained headlocked over this issue and governmental agencies were in a state of delicate impasse. The Poseidons were far too cultured and gentle in nature to attempt to fight the Aryans and sought to educate them and spiritually influence them into changing their ways. The Aryans, who outnumbered the Poseidons 3-1, dared not attack Poseida lest they have the crystalline energy that powered the nation shut off. Colonial wars. In the interim, outbreaks of war erupted between the Aryan-controlled Atlantean military as the former colonies of Atlantis located in the Mediterranean areas broke traditional ties and developed their own independent governments. The colonies, particularly those in Greece and Turkey, saw the change from the utopian Atlantis to the military fascist state controlled by Aryan and sought to break away. Although the Aryans had the military edge, the Mediterranean states did not succumb, and regional colonial wars raged on with neither side able to dominate the other. Factions within Aryan increasingly sought to use crystal energy to quell the adversaries. This was firmly refused by the Atlara and Law of One populace of Poseida. Several futile attempts to terrorize the Poseidons were attempted by the Aryans, and each was quelled. The Poseidons retaliated by shutting down the power and negating the Aryans. The Aryans responded by stopping food supply and manufactured goods. A great impasse ensued. The Atlantean Unification Congress. In a great deceptive scheme, disguised as a plan for unification, the Aryans approached the Poseidons with the formation of a renewed national congress to work out their growingly tense differences and bring harmony to Atlantis. Representatives from the Law of One were sent along with the representatives from the Sons of Belial. The Congress was formalized with an equal amount of representation from the two parties. Within short order, a federation of sorts was sanctified with the promise of greater harmony. It appeared for several decades that the promise of change and betterment might come about from the National Congress. The Posidons were encouraged and many of them let down their guard. The Atlara remained wary of the motives and sensed deception. Initially, the National Congress did improve relations and many minor superficial laws that promised unity were set in motion. Yet the primary points of opposition, the genetic slavery and Kreitzel energy management, remained unresolved. However, from within the Sons of Belial had risen a hypnotic charismatic leadership who seduced the masses in Atlantis into believing they were the answer to returning Atlantis to its lost golden age of prominence and abundance. The leaders of this group were the souls that you know as Hitler and Himmler, indeed the supremest Nazis of your World War II. Large militaristic legions were formed and gained the edge in covert political persuasion and power. The hybrid mutants were used to terrorize those who opposed them in Aryan and Dog, and one occasion this was futilely attempted in Poseida. The powerful Aryan contingent were masters of manipulation and media. They presented well-thought-out arguments that masked their true intentions and promised mutual compromise. The propaganda seemed quite feasible on the surface and convinced many, including moderates and some from the law of one, of its hope for harmony. In what appeared to be a great opportunity for resolution, a law was proposed by the Belial group to bring the genetic engineering, heretofore controlled by the state of Aryan, under federalized control, and in return, bring the Crystal Poser system under the control of a governmental agency. A great discussion and debate occurred under great national scrutiny. A vote was set, but failed in the congressional vote. Betrayal, however, a compelling compromise was offered by the cunning leadership of the Belial, which allowed for the law to be passed on the basis that a council staffed with five Posidons and four Aryans would head a new government agency for federalized crystalline energy control. The fact that the law of one were given apparent majority control of the council made the plan seem very promising to the populace of Poseida. The law allowed that no changes could be made without majority consensus of the council, but included the caveat that while the Atlara would remain in departmental head positions, they would no longer be exempt from governmental controls. A training program was included that would allow engineers from both parties, outside the Atlara, to be trained and taught the complex engineering. Initially, despite the wariness of Atlara, the system appeared to be working and bringing a better harmony. However, within 2 years, the wars in the Mediterranean roared back in full escalation, and the rebelling colonies seemed to be gaining the advantage. Pressure mounted to use crystal beams for war purposes under the guise of national security. A discussion, debate and vote was scheduled for the governing council. National security was doubted and a misaligned sense of manipulated patriotism swept the land. Then the deception rolled into effect. To the great shock and chagrin of the Posidons, one of the Law of One members of the council switched positions. He was neither of the Atlara, nor the Golden Race. He had risen politically as a charismatic leader, a trusted negotiator, who had pledged allegiances to the Law of One and gained their full confidence. He had been targeted and seduced by the Aryans, and fell victim to his ambitions. In the aftermath, this one felt great remorse, and spent subsequent lifetimes attempting to make up for the mistake. For truly he did not foresee the catastrophic ending, and had allowed himself to be blindly compromised under promises of power and position. The Second Moon of Atlantis. That which was known as the Second Moon of Atlantis, the crystalline Poser grids in fire crystals came under governmental control, and their usage became altered as the Aryan knowledge of the programming grew. The Atlara were able to defer the usage initially, but in time were stymied. Now, as we have mentioned earlier, that term the Second Moon of Atlantis was in fact a massive crystalline satellite. It was of Arcturian construct and managed by the priest-scientist of the Law of One. The crystalline satellite was an enormous unmanned sphere of brilliant engineering, approximately 5 miles in diameter. It has been in use since the Golden Age of Atlantis, and served myriad benevolent purpose. It amplified and controlled the various crystal beams sent from the fire, healing and energy crystals. It was somewhat of a computerized macro ship that refracted, amplified and reflected powerfully refined beams of energy for use in agriculture, weather control, tide control, healing temples, regeneration temples and the enhanced energy systems generated by the Crystal Pulsar system. It loomed in the skies over Atlantis and appeared as a golden harvest moon, and thus was known as the second moon of Atlantis. Also, the wise man Rampa said Earth had two moons in the past. A rainbow kaleidoscopic energy band of anti-gravity plasma swirled around the sphere, and often appeared as what you now term the aurora or northern lights. The satellite Crystal Moon did not orbit the Earth, it moved as programmed, self-directed, constantly shifting locations in order to form its myriad disks over Atlantis, Africa and the eastern seaboard of Brazil. After the crystalline grid complex legally came under federalized Aryan control, the Belial group integrated their own technologists into the engineering group, quickly replacing key department heads with their own. The Atlara attempted to block their attempt to reprogram the satellite for war usage, explaining that overloading the satellite would dissipate the anti-gravity field that maneuvered it, and a catastrophic crash could occur. The Aryan scientist debunked the claim. Some of the Atlara were threatened and removed, others began to mysteriously disappear. Many of the Poseidons felt intimidated and powerless as the Governing Council allowed for the satellite to become a strategic defense weapon, certain it would function as programmed, and bring a quick end to the rebellion wars. The Belial scientist, with Council approval, reprogrammed a system bypass and began sending destructive thermal light beams used to initiate volcanic eruptions and massive earthquakes against colonies and nations who refused to give in to their demands. These were aimed in the areas of what is now Greece and Turkey, and caused great devastation. Indeed, it gave the zealous Aryans the battle advantage they so fervently desired, and they jubilantly increased its usage, with support of most of the populace. The beginning of the end. The crystal moon began to overload, weakening the anti-gravity field that kept it afloat. The Atlara understood the implications of what would soon occur when the programming crashed, but their pleas to the council continued to be ignored. After several months of prolonged war use, the satellite began to erratically swerve and shift, and power blackouts began to occur. Tireless attempts to correct it were unsuccessful. The Atlara were asked to lend support in correcting it, most refused. Some agreed to try and stabilize it to prevent the impending disaster. All attempts failed. The council refused the suggestion to incinerate the satellite, disbelieving that it would crash, and minimizing the effects of an impact even if it did. Relocation of the crystals. Tibor and Oberon gathered an inner group of loyalists within the Atlara and Law of One to plan a circuitry disconnection and imminent relocation of the fire and energy crystals to various safe locations before the impending crash of the master satellite. This was done with the technology and assistance of those from Sirius B. The relocation of the precious crystals was very risky, and required careful planning and great secrecy. It had to be done before the crash of the second moon, and without knowledge of the Governing Council. Simultaneously, other trusted members of the Atlara worked furiously at hastily and safely gathering data, recording crystals, crystalline skulls and engraved historical records for secure placements in Yucatan, Alexandria and Giza. This was only partially accomplished, so much was not able to be saved. Atlantis had numerous power crystals located throughout the five islands and along specific relay routes of the underground labyrinth system. The Atlara knew that once the modulated motherboard of the Crystal Moon satellite lost its anti-gravity field, it would crash in a huge explosion, and its crashing would subsequently wreak havoc on the major and Poseidon energy crystals, creating catastrophic secondary explosions of a nuclear class within hours or days of the crash. The Atlara and Sirians wanted to ensure the master crystals would not be destroyed or used for any further negative purpose, and be saved for a time when mankind could use them as they were intended. They understood the power required to transport them would be lost after the crash, and that urgent expediency was required.